The Guardian. Hello, this is Politics Weekly. I'm Allegra Stratton and he's Tom Clark.
Joining us in the pod, we have our marvellous columnist Jackie Ashley, and from the Politics Department at Goldsmiths and indeed from the Liberal Democrats Federal Policy Committee, we have Professor Richard Grayson.
A warm welcome to you both. But a warm welcome was notably absent at this week's TUC for the Bank of England's Mervyn King. His previous endorsement of deep government cuts ensured a frosty reception. We'll come to the unions and holier matters later on, but this weekend sees our focus switch to a party whose conferences in past years have tended to be more about theory than practice. Not this year.
Despite a poor, or at least disappointing, set of election results, the Liberal Democrats are now in government. But far from celebrating, members are fearful for the future of their party, which has hit rock bottom in the polls. And some are also angry at the cutting coalition they find themselves at the heart of. Now, Richard, we've got in front of us today's Times and the article here from Nick Clegg talking about, yes, there will be benefit cuts, but benefit cuts governed by liberal principles. Do you think the party's in a mood to buy this, or do you think some of them might start to wonder whether their man is actually Nasty Nick?
I've been one of the main critics of the coalition, and one of the things that struck me is how the party is actually ready to buy a lot of stuff that Nick's coming out with. And they certainly took the line that the budget was about fairness, but that's gradually being chipped away at. You know, there was the IFS report. They could dismiss the Fabian report as being oppositionist, but the IFS report, I think, was quite telling. And some of the comments that Nick has come out with today in the article are quite breathtaking, actually. I don't think they're going to help him get through conference. You know, when he talks about it not being the role of the benefit system to compensate the poor for their predicament, and says that instead of being a safety net, the benefit system should be a trampoline, I want to know what's wrong with a safety net. And I want to know if people who are proposing welfare reforms actually understand how hard it is to live on benefits.
And how hard it is to make these policy trade-offs. I mean, you can talk about a benefit bouncy castle if he wants, but Labour's been grappling with exactly the same problems for years, hasn't it, Jackie?
Yes, it has indeed. I think what's interesting is that Nick is coming out fighting ahead of this conference, because I was imagining he was going to be much more emollient towards his party members. I think one fascinating thing that's happening this week is the signs on tridents, because it looks as though, you know, he may go to the conference and say, well, I'm not sure about getting a change in the voting system. I'm not sure that we're all very happy about what we've done on the budget and the cuts. But hey, we may have trident as a great feather in our cap to say this is why the Lib Dems are in government. So it could be the fact he's got something there, or sees a sign of something coming on trident, means he can be tougher on other things, such as welfare reform.
And we got that stuff from Michael Gove, didn't we, kind of turning the free school stuff on its head.
Yeah, free schools are all going to be, you know, helping poor people rather than actually free schools.
And that's so, careful timing, isn't
indeed,
it? Indeed,
there's all sorts of neutralising of all the policies that the Lib Dem activists are most cross about.
But what could they do, these cross Lib Dem activists, anyway? I mean, they can go to fringe events and give interviews to us, but they can't really do any more than that, can they? This is a fixed-term parliament, isn't it?
It is a fixed-term parliament. On the other hand, the Lib Dems are at 12% in the latest poll this week. There will be local elections coming next May. It could be the end of the Liberal Democrat Party if they're not very careful. And if Nick Clegg and his Orange Book colleagues are seen to be completely isolated and the party not with them, then I think they will be punished at the polls by that next time round.
Richard, these Orange Bookers, how did they come to have such a stranglehold on the party? Because you've been involved at quite high levels.
By stealth, in lots of ways. And in the first instance, we didn't take them terribly seriously. The Orange Book appeared during the September 2004 conference, which was just the end of my time as the party's director of policy for the previous 5 years. And we'd spent a lot of time going through the process of designing a pre-manifesto that was the basis of the 2005 election manifesto. And some of the things in the Orange Book had just been kicked out. You know, David Law's proposal for health insurance, for example. There were other things that were hugely overstated as being departures from party policy. In fact, chapters by Nick and by Mark Oughton, which got a lot of attention, actually were already party policy. But so we just looked at them and thought, well, you know, there's a manifesto that we've all agreed. That's what the party will stand on. There was huge anger about the timing of the Orange Book, which undermined the position we'd agreed. And there was no formal response, because a lot of us were too busy, or had been too busy, actually running the party, and felt broadly very happy with the policy direction. And it was only about 3 years later that a group of us published a book called Reinventing the State, which hit back at some of the arguments.
Chris but Hume was the poster boy for it, wasn't he?
Well, actually, there was
his face is on the front of it.
Yeah, that's quite a long story, which is just that actually the person who produced the cover and extracted a picture of extracted from a picture of Lib Dem MPs didn't know who he was. He's obviously considerably more well known now. But it was originally just a group of Lib Dem MPs. So cock up.
I was talking to someone about, for a piece I'm doing about the coalition agreement and how much of it is sort of intact now, and they were saying that it was almost as if Nick Clegg and David Laws had gone through the past 4 years writing down all the things that you guys had beat them back on, and then had gone into the coalition agreement and said, make us do this.
I think that's true on a lot of areas. I mean, the classic example is on academies, where we, on Federal Policy Committee about 2 years ago, year and a half ago maybe, went through a policy paper on education, which was very pro-academy, and just pulled all that stuff out and reinserted democratic local control. And don't forget that, you know, Nick's first speech as leader was about free schools. He used that phrase, and there was a minor rebellion within the party over it. Letters to Lib Dem News, which, you know, none of you guys would have noticed because journalists weren't paying attention to the Lib Dems at the time. But he just dropped it.
And of course, I think what's interesting now is whether there's going to be any sort of focus for rebellion. I mean, Charles Kennedy seems to be playing a sort of rather odd game, doesn't he? Not quite sure whether he's going to be raising the flag of rebellion at conference or not now. I think earlier signs he might have been. Now he seems to be pulling out of various fringe meetings. But if not Charles, then who? Simon Hughes was the other obvious one, and he a few months ago was making noises about the cuts, but again he's been rather silenced now, hasn't he?
I think there will be people who get doorstep by journalists, and Simon will be one of them, who will no doubt have a posse of journalists following him round, inspecting his every word, and that may lead to some comments that could be seen as rebellion. But I think we're sort of like the French Resistance in 1940. The French Resistance didn't really get going till 41, 42. There's no real... Yeah. There were just random acts of sabotage, but very little else.
There's also another interesting thing going on, which is the sort of the difference in thinking philosophy around the coalition and how you perceive it. So there's the Nick Clegg school of thought, which is you do a Rose Garden stunt and it's love, but that kind of makes it very difficult for you to have a coalition with Labour in the 2015 election. Whereas then there's the Vince Cable school of thought, which is you make it obvious that you're unhappy about certain stuff and that's allowed because you're in a coalition, it's not a merger.
Absolutely. Vince used the phrase business agreement, I think, and that's far more appropriate. And if you look at European coalitions and the way they operate, it's quite common for cabinet colleagues to be critical of each other and to recognise that there are real differences. And I think that's part of the UK getting used to what coalitions are like. I think there's a sense among some Lib Dems that if there's the slightest sign of a split, that will show that coalitions don't work. But I think quite the reverse is true. I think there's a real danger that people come to see coalitions as deals stitched up behind closed doors, dropping things that you don't agree with.
It's almost his tone and his choice of language, I think, isn't it, coming from Nick Clegg, which is so gushing about the coalition and so unprepared to make clear his reservations. And I think
the big society, he said, is just another name for the liberal society.
Yeah. I mean, he just seems to have gone completely overboard. And I think that's what's upsetting a lot in his party at the moment. They don't mind the coalition. They accept that it was a deal that had to be done. And yes, there's some good things to come out of it, but you don't have to love it as well.
He's always had a funny language problem, actually. Yeah. He overreaches in there, so that's where Savage Cuts came from.
He's very flamboyant in his speaking style, and if you inspect his sentences, you'll usually find one very vivid word or phrase, which sometimes backfires. I think Mike White wrote a piece about this a few months ago.
Savage Cuts was classic.
He puts in a growl to quite a lot of sentences as well, doesn't he? Savage! But there's a serious point here about the possibility of a pact where we're suddenly starting to get talk from mischievous, I don't know, or maybe just electorally literate people like Nick Bowles on the Tory side talking about a pact, Jackie. Could it happen? I mean, you look at the Lib Dems on 12%. On 12%, what's inconceivable at 24% becomes a kind of necessary life insurance policy, right?
I can't believe it will happen, because you only have to look at the Lib Dems and the Conservatives on the ground, where they have traditionally fought each other and they traditionally still do not like each other. So I think it's highly unlikely. I think whatever the people at Westminster say about a pact, I can't really see it happening lower down, but we wait to see.
I can't see it happening. Nick said it won't happen as well. He gave an interview a month ago and it's going to be hard for him to eat his words. But that's the kind
of
thing...
He's done it
before. Yes, I suppose so. That's the kind of thing that would lead to mass defections.
Is there another way here? Is it conceivable if, I mean, with the parties being so aligned, with most of the news that's likely to come out of the government being so grim and so rotten with the spending cuts and everything, is there any way that the Liberal Democrats could think about, or progressive Liberal Democrats could think about, extricating themselves and having some kind of alliance where they maintain a distinctive identity with Labour under one of these Miliband boys?
It's hard, because this requires parliamentary leadership, and it's difficult to see where the parliamentary leadership of any kind of split is coming from. It's also the case that if we were in a slightly tighter situation where a splitting of, say, 15 or 20 Lib Dems could suddenly put Labour into power, I could see that happening. But then we'd probably have done a deal with Labour in the first place anyway. So,
but I think the change of personnel in the Labour Party is the key to this. And I think the way whichever Miliband plays it is absolutely essential. I think Ed has been very stupid to sort of say he won't deal with the Lib Dems, because I think, in a way, his natural style, which is more inclusive, I think, than David's, would be very appealing to some Lib Dems.
So
I could quite see quite a lot of...
That you take that to be...
Well, no, he's trying to get Lib Dems on board by saying, you know, we don't like Clare, but I don't think that's the way to do it.
I also talking about extinguishing or making them extinct.
Extinct, yes.
Richard, the way I read it as well, you know, you always sort of look at these elections and think, you know, well, if I had a vote, who would it be for? And I started off thinking that Ed would be the choice, but actually I've been much more impressed by David Miliband for some of the reasons that John Crudders gave when he backed him. But the way I think there is a clear difference in the way that they approach Lib Dems, which is that Ed talks about stripping away Lib Dem support. He doesn't really seem to be interested in talking to Lib Dems, whereas I think David actually has come across as a genuine pluralist.
Well, one thing that might well come up during the conference at the end of the week is the subject that's never going away, really, at the moment, which is cuts. Jackie Ashley, we've just had the unions... version of cuts. They don't like them. No great surprise there. But do they have a strategy?
I don't really think they do. And certainly the unions and the Labour Party together don't seem to have a strategy, do they? I think you had a lot of noises from the TUC about all out, one out, all out, mass strikes and everything, which didn't really seem to get much of a pickup through the mainstream politicians. I think it's still too early. I think we have to wait till the cuts bite. And I think then it will be possible to gauge the level of public anger. Then I think you might get a lot more in the way of industrial action. I think for the moment, the TUC looked as though they were rather ahead of the game on trying to assume the whole country is going to come out in the way that the French do to protest en masse against the coalition.
Richard, what's the difference in attitude between the Lib Dems and the Tories towards this? I mean, the Tories would want to change it and increase thresholds or put in thresholds and elements like that. But what's Lib Dem attitude?
I think on the general issue of cuts, Lib Dems have certainly bought into the idea that there have to be cuts. After all, that's what our manifesto said. Mm. But we did very clearly sign up to a package that was the same as Labour's in terms of scale and timing. And that does cause huge problems for the party. And I think already there have been people who've expressed concern about individual cuts that have come through. But they are going to be huge. They are actually going to be savage.
But what is the Lib Dem attitude? Because obviously the Labour Party has a long historic relationship with trade unions. But what's the attitude of Lib Dem rank and file to a mass movement against cuts that's led by unions?
It's not the kind of thing that Lib Dems would instinctively support. They don't have the kind of tradition of engagement with trade unions back a century ago. You know, in the early 1900s, there were close connections, but the unions gradually split off and went to the Labour Party. And but I could see a change. I could see, particularly because the Lib Dems have become much more over the last decade a party of public sector employees, I could see some very different attitudes. And I think there may also be a sense of betrayal. You know, I, at Goldsmiths, have been managing overall 30 staff for the last 4 years, and a lot of people have talked about strike action over cuts. And my response to them before the election was, look, there are going to be cuts, whichever party's in. I would advise you to go out and campaign for a party that will have slower and smaller cuts than the Tories, which I thought meant Labour and the Lib Dems at the time. But obviously we've now signed up to the Tory package.
Sounds like you're about to defect.
No.
Why not?
There are plenty of people who stay in there. Party, you know, you can talk to a lot of Labour people who've stayed in their party and had a fight, and I'm willing to fight for a while.
The interesting thing is, if you do the maths, because of your position before the election and Labour's position, these guys don't have a mandate.
I think that's right,
and so you're right. It could be a kind of
absolutely. And I've heard people come on and say, well, you know, the trade unions don't have a mandate for this kind of strike. Well, nor does the government have a mandate for these kinds of cuts.
Do you think that the getting through this week, though, for Nick Clegg, is going to be fairly straightforward? Because they're still kind of hypothetical. We had a bit of get rid of child trust fund and one or two other things. Earlier in the year, the real cuts are going to be announced, aren't they, in October?
Yeah. Before the story today on benefits, I thought it would be quite an easy ride for him, because I think that Lib Dems accept, or at least believe, that they had no alternative. They don't look at the option of having put the Tories in as a minority. And generally, a lot of people can look at something that the government's doing and find something they really like and say, great, you know, we're in power for the first time in decades. We're actually doing something. I think the flashpoint, other than things that may or may not go on the fringe, which ultimately can't really damage anybody, the flashpoint would have been over the issue of academies, where there is a debate on the Monday of conference. There's a very critical motion that's put down. But I think people's perception of where the government is coming from, I've argued that it's clearly coming from the centre-right in Lib Dem terms. I think that may be affected by the statements that Nick's made in the Times about benefits.
And do you think you've got this kind of famous party democracy, which of course gives Nick Clegg now terrific insulation? He can say, well, you know, we came and asked you all voted by North Korean majorities to go into the coalition. But the question is, like, do they now feel that they've can just ignore the party democracy and everything else, the leadership, I mean, because they can say, well, you know, we agree with you that we don't want these academy schools or whatever, but, you know, it's a coalition, so we're going to lose out on most things.
Well,
does the democracy sort of become irrelevant?
They'd be really stupid if they think that, because people have a fairly short fuse when it comes to not being consulted. But the point is, they're not actually saying we don't want academies. You know, I still get all the candidates' mailings from Party HQ. And when Gove made one of his academy announcements, the line that came out of HQ was, we're rolling out the academy package, and this is going to give parents more of a say over education after a decade of Labour centralisation. So they're actually saying they're quite enthusiastic about things.
Jackie, the Trade Union Congress was remarkable for other reasons, and that was partly the new Labour leader and how they would possibly deal with them. I mean, it's quite difficult for them. You've got Ed Miliband has been endorsed by three of the biggest ones. But if David Miliband were to be elected leader, he's been endorsed by none of them, so he pretty much has a mandate to do what he wants.
Well, I wonder if he missed a trick there when he was asked, you know, if there were big strikes, would he be out there standing beside them? And he declined to say that he would. I mean, you can say, yes, you protest, but you don't necessarily have to say you'd be, you know, encouraging everyone to strike. And I think that will have damaged him as regards the leadership contest a little bit. Ed Miliband, is he going to be sort of in the hands of the unions if he gets it? I don't really think so. I think whoever gets the Labour leadership, there's always this wonderful honeymoon period, isn't there? And they'll do what they want. I think.
Except they've got a TSR to deal with 3 weeks in.
Hand that over to Ed Balls as Chancellor, or whoever it's going to be.
Do your stuff, Ed.
Well, as the congregation departs from the TUC, as well as the congregation assembling of Liberal Democrats, there's another one which is taking place up in Scotland, and it's a little bit loftier, although it's not, Allegra, universally popular in nature.
Pope Benedict XVI is touching down in Edinburgh just as we record. The taxpayers picked up the tab, Jackie. Should they have done?
No, I don't think so. I think what's much more worrying about this whole thing is the way David Cameron now seems to be saying the big society is all part of the Catholic Church, and suddenly the sort of we do religion, unlike Tony Blair and Alistair Campbell, who didn't do God. And I feel slightly worried that the whole national debate is now going to be kowtowing to religion, which I don't really think should have any part in setting our laws. But it is a whole big issue that's coming up, and I think his visit, the Pope's visit, has really kicked off this debate now.
And is that something Lib Dems feel comfortable with? Isn't Nick Clegg a declared atheist and sort of belligerent about it?
Yeah, there's a very wide range of views in the Lib Dems on this. I'm a member of the Church of England practicing, but I'm fully in favour of disestablishing the Church of England. I don't think that religion should have a formalised role in policy making. I think as regards to the Pope's visit, we have to remember that the Vatican is a state. Mm. It's a nation state. I think we usually cover the costs of state visits. I don't think the Pope should be treated differently to other any head of state. But I've always made a point of not sort of commenting on the affairs of the Catholic Church. You know, there was a Reformation, and Anglicans left, and the Catholics can get on with their own church affairs, but as far as I'm concerned.
Hasn't Richard got a really good point here, though, which is that in a way this is a state visit. Okay, it's a small state and it's a funny state. It's got diplomatic relations with 175 countries. It's got influence right around the world, and the government needs to work with it on foreign policy questions about development and stuff. Why shouldn't they have a dinner or whatever?
At a time of cuts, it does seem rather extravagant to have all this, but I can quite see that, yes, I don't terribly object to him coming. As I say, it's more the way that Cameron is trying to now hijack this visit to kind of say that, well, actually religion is all very much part of this big society idea and as what we're doing, because I think that's quite dangerous, because I think there are such religious tensions in this country and indeed all over the world that the less religion is to do with politics, the better for all of us, frankly.
I strongly agree with that. I mean, you know, I think church schools can be very divisive, for example. I would want to see a secular state as far as possible.
Well, on that note, we're going to thank our congregation, Jackie Ashley and Richard Grayson. The producer was Phil Maynard. I'm Allegra Stratton. He's Tom Clark, and thank you for listening.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.